All right, folks, welcome back to the latest Mountain West Fire basketball podcast. We are back for President's Day weekend. Eli, do you have President's Day off from anything? School, work?
I do have the day off of one class, so it's not like anything major, but it's always nice to be able to sleep in.
Excellent. Same with me. I'm not working Monday. That's what, contrary to what people say on Twitter, I have a high profile job. My job may not be high profile, but my show is, so I get the
It's
day off.
It's a blue check mark, right?
It's a blue. Oh, yes, we'll go with my blue check mark. But there's a few things going on. But MWR.com, that's the website. We don't take breaks. So if you're traveling and you get this Sunday night, Monday during the day, give us a listen. We got some hoops to go over. Find us on Facebook, I guess. We're getting a few likes there. Twitter, all that fun stuff. You know where to find us. Typically, you, Eli, tweet basketball stuff throughout the games. But where should we start tonight? We got a couple of things. Discuss the CSU stuff a little bit more, because there is a little bit more of new news, just a little bit.
Yeah, we can discuss a little bit.
Okay, so how surprised are you that Larry Stacey, as of 9:04 Mountain Time Sunday, February 18th, he's still the head coach of Colorado State?
It is surprising, isn't it? I think we're a month. Isn't it a month past when the initial reports came out?
He's missed what?
It's close.
At least 3 weeks. It's been first week of February, I thought it was. Like February 2nd or something.
Okay, so it's inching there. But it's been a while. I'm surprised he's still with the university.
I don't know, because you hear what we had Justin on talking about. He hangs out more in California than Colorado State area, Fort Collins. I don't know, man. It is a unique situation. And I think... I guess let's start with this. Over at the Denver Post, Matt Stevens has been all over this. So has just him. Sorry, I have like four tabs open for CSU. 5 days ago, so February 13th, it's reported that the investigation has completed. A week prior to that, it was him, Eustacey, saying he's expected to be fired. Why is it taking so long?
I don't know, and even before that, Eustacey said that his job was safe, and then the next day he said he was going to be gone, and it sounded like that was going to happen last weekend, I believe. It sounded like he was going to be terminated, and we're here on Sunday night, it still hasn't happened yet.
And they're also on their third coach, if you haven't heard, if you're under a rock and not paying attention to us. It's just the weirdest thing, and here's something I want to talk about, because... looks like early in the week, I'll give you a quick update. His Eustacey's attorney met with Colorado State earlier on Tuesday to defend the allegations of that abuse. In a final interview, it's been a 2 week investigation. So right now, almost 3 weeks, because this was done February 13th on Monday, day before Valentine's Day, I believe. So it was the first formal meeting of the parties during the process, which is odd as well. 2 weeks later, you'd think they have all this backstory information from the prior report, from former AD Joe Parker, and everything going, all the legalese stuff that's come out, some tweets about some memos about what he's allegedly done or admitted to doing, I should say. So I don't know why it took him 2 weeks to meet. Like, what else is Colorado State doing? Like, what were they doing to, you're on administrative leave. It's similar situations from a couple years ago, but we're not going to meet you through a lawyer for 2 weeks. What else are they looking into?
Do you think that they just completed the investigation? Now they're gathering opinions on what to do next, because there could be some break even point where they meet as a group and kind of determine what to do in the next step.
I bet it's like a buyout situation. Like, what can he get paid for or not get paid for?
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that's what they're working on? Because he is 62.
It could be.
Not that that's extremely like coach beyond that, but he's not like a young guy either.
That could be the situation. I just would have thought that this whole process would have been completed at least a week ago, but it's possible that this termination might not happen until the regular season ends. I mean, it's a possibility, right? I mean, we're both surprised it's lasted this long.
Yeah, it's here's one interesting note. Two things. We're doing pre-show stuff here, which, yes, we do, so at time to time. But here's a couple notes on his extension and buyout, and we'll get to the other hoop stuff momentarily. But this is the biggest story, obviously, and we want to update, because we're not writing every little bit that comes out here. So his salary, that is Larry Eustacey, $985,000. And he has a buyout from about $3 million should Colorado State terminate his contract without cause, which, honestly, I don't see it. I think they can get fire him with cause because zero tolerance, and this is a minimum second offense, at least public offense, of what he did. Shady Stacy terminated the contract, which we'll get to momentarily, which is quite interesting, which goes through 2021. He would owe CSU at this time $4.5 million. However, this is interesting for CSU maybe being too nice. The Denver Post says that should Stacy elect to resign, school would waive that buyout it's owed. Should CSU waive the buyout if he resigns?
So it kind of works both ways, doesn't it?
Well, here's the thing. We'll get to the other part which we discussed before, which is quite interesting. Basically, if he's fired without cause, he gets paid through about $3 million. If Eustace, essentially the buyout's for, as most people understand, he would take another job. So let's just say if this scenario was him taking a job in the Pac-12 during the summer, he would owe, or there'd be some sort of buyout of him owing CSU $4.5 million because he left the university for another job. But it doesn't specify. This is if he's fired with cause, he technically should owe them $4.5 million.
I find it hard to believe that this won't end with Larry Eustace being fired with cause.
You don't think so?
I think it's guaranteed to happen.
Oh, that it will happen. But, okay.
But and Eustace's not expected to take another job either. He said countless times that he wants to end his career in Fort Collins, and it probably isn't going to end up the way as he wished, but that does seem like the foregone conclusion.
But do you think the Rams are being too nice if he resigns to waive that?
Probably, because you can easily fire him for cause. I mean, everything's on the table.
No, I mean,
there's so much documentation of what he's done.
I mean, but why should they let him off the hook for that?
That's true. Yeah,
that's what I'm getting at. Like, so I'm betting this is what the lawyers, everybody's coming together. Like, how can we negotiate this out? I just don't think they should waive the buyout. And so it's like, here's a couple reasons why. Your school in this conference that's not raking in $40 million, what the SEC got for foot college sports, mainly football, you're not even getting the $20-plus million the Pac-12 or ACC are getting. Why would the Rams give up? You know what they could do with $4.5 million just in athletics? That could buy that could get a new coach. Let's just say they get a coach that's the same salary. That's a four-year contract right there. Four-year deal to get a pretty good coach to come to town. Why would they let that just off the hook and say, oh, whatever, you resign, no hard feelings, you owe us nothing?
I don't think that's happening, yeah.
So here's what we found out before. I first discovered this by Sean Starr, and then I found the article on from Kelly Lyle at the Coloradoan. This contract, Eli, we discussed, is quite unique. So here's the timeline where I'm thinking this is pure speculation, so don't say this is a fact, accurate. This is me spitballing, which I think is kind of correct, where last February there was the big deal by the Coloradoan. I think it was Matt Stevens, right, who did the first piece about the multi-year investigation. Is that correct?
I believe it was him. I can't say with 100% positivity,
I'm pretty
sure it was him.
So that was in February. And again, this is a two-year deal. So it's not like they found something 2 months later, they resolved it, or they printed this or found the information. This was a multi-year thing. So here's what's cool. This is one of the most unique contracts I've seen. And we mentioned before, like, Eli, here's what it works out to be. I'll read it. And so you can, yeah, whatever. This is back in August 2013. He has a contract. Currently, the contract goes through 2021. But here's how it came out. Eustace mentioned part of this quote here. He's like, well, I can't go anywhere. And really, they can't put me anywhere because this is a commitment by two parties, which, great. But the most unique thing is this extension after, technically, 2018 was when his original deal is to end. However, there's an optional extension for 3 years by either side. That means Eustace could pick it up or the school could pick it up, which usually it's one or the other.
So do you think Eustace could pick it up and then CSU would have to deal with that? A confusing situation.
It is, because that's where that money comes in. And here's what's even more confusing. I'll read through the article, because that's the point. Like, if you have a contract, there's always a buyout on the side. Typically, if you're a college coach and you get fired, even for losing games, which you would think would be for cause, they still get probably all their buyout owed to them or most of it. And what, look at like Charlie Weiss, he's getting paid millions of dollars from Notre Dame and Kansas. Like he's getting paid out the wazoo to not coach for how, I think it's coming to an end, but that's the same deal. But here's what's more interesting. Eustachy, this is October 20th, it's 2016. A mere 3 months or 4 months before it came out publicly, again, key phrasing, publicly, that he was threatening players, swearing directly at players, just being an overly abusive coach, which we've seen recently that come up again. Eli, he had to know this is coming out, that he's being investigated, because he met with lawyers and Joe Parker, the former AD, about, hey, do this again and you're gone. So he, at this point in October, he had to have known what was coming up, right? You would think.
You would think so, and even before this, just knowing his past, you would think that people within the program of whichever university he's associated with, that there would be at least some type of I don't want to say big brother, but something like that. There's always someone going to be watching what he's doing because he's known to have a bit of an erratic personality that could cause issues with NCAA.
That's what our guy Justin Michael said last week, that you could rarely go to any practices. Like you could talk to players after, you'd see very few minutes of practice time. But here's the thing too, Rams made this contract knowing what he did at Southern Miss, knowing what he did at Iowa State, knowing what he did anywhere else when you look into his history. The contract's way too friendly to him, to the coach. Not that you should make it super restrictive, like super high buyout or no coach option or no bonuses, because he had nice bonuses. Like, yeah, $200,000 for making the NCAA tournament, $100,000 per round or per victory, 100 grand for winning the Mountain West regular season or conference title, winning 20 games, get 40K. Those are pretty nice. Those are fairly standard, I would say. But here's where it gets interesting. This was a three, not a 3 year contract extension, 3 1 year extensions, which is very unique. It doesn't make sense.
But I, why would you do that? That's my question.
Well, this was Eustachy doing it, remember? He picked this up.
But why have separate contract extensions layered on top of one another?
I know there's stuff like where if you win 20 games, you add a year onto the contract. Like, I think Boise State football with Brian Harsin, I think if they win 8 games, which is pretty much a given for them almost every year, he gets a, I think it's a 1 year add-on plus $100,000.
Leon Rice has that too.
Yeah, something like that. You win X amount of games, add on plus a bump in pay. But it's just a 3 1 year thing, and where it doesn't make sense either, when you look at his buyout, like as of right now, if Eustachy were to leave the program by June 30th, 2018, for any reason, typically, like I said, you're going to take another job, he would owe the school $4.5 million. And then it decreases to 1.125, 5.6, and then 5, and it just kind of decreases through the next couple years. So I just don't get why. First off, the contract's weird. 3 1 year deals. You would think, why would the buyout for him leaving be $4.5 million if it's not a true 3 year contract extension?
I don't know. I guess my main question is, and you might not have the answer to this, is what if Eustachy, I guess, opts into the contract extensions and the university opts out? Or
No,
is that even a possibility?
the way it's worded here in the contract extension, the contract is unique. The coach said in that either he or the universities can pick up. It's not like I pick this up and I have to agree to picking it up. Either side could trigger the extension. It's like a player option you hear a lot in NBA, or yeah, typically NBA player option. I'll pick up my player option. That's what this is. The team can't say no, or either way, they can't agree to. Whoever says yes has to do it. So if the Rams were to pick him up for an extension, the station would be, and I guess on the Rams side would be because we don't want you to go anywhere because other people want your job. Or I mean, you want a better job. That's why the Rams may lock him up, because then they would be protected by some future buyout. But they're still protected in this one anyways. So I guess what it comes down to, the Rams, they're negotiating some sort of buyout, because if he's fired with cause, $4.5 million should be coming to the Rams basketball program or the whatever they do with that money. So I guarantee what they're working on. And am I wrong to say the timing? You say she did that intentionally? Is that, I don't think that's too far-fetched. To say October extension picked up, February reports come out saying he hasn't been a great coach because he's being overly aggressive, verbally abusive. I don't think that's a coincidence one bit, because had he not picked up the extension, there's no reason for the Rams to pick him up. But also, the Rams are going to give him one more chance, not fire him as well at that time. Because, all right, yes, it's pretty bad stuff. Here's what we're going to do. You're going to do whatever, six meetings for like what, anger management, whatever. If you do something again, you get to film practice, all that stuff. But the Rams are still protected by him picking it up. But Eustachy also, because I just think, I don't think there's a coincidence one bit. He had to have known.
It's certainly a possibility. You bring up some good points. But if I were in his situation, I probably would have done the same, honestly, because
Yeah.
then it's a bigger obstacle for the university to try to negate those additional extensions, and that just makes a larger financial problem for the university.
Well, and also, like I said, every coach typically you get some sort of money when you're done. I just think they're going to negotiate some buyout, and Eustachy's going to have to pay the money one way or the other. There's zero way he survives this at all, and because how great does this for him? I not that it's great, but I'm put on leave. He's still being paid, hanging out in California essentially. He could still, what's he owed? $3 million? It's like, he's hanging out. Could there's three? There's a lot of money on the line. $3 million. So he's gonna do what he can, because that would wipe out $4.5 million. Would wipe out his entire contract he's already earned, I believe.
Yeah, I was going to mention that to you. It seems like that $4.5 million total is about what his contracts up to this point with Colorado State probably adds up to.
And there's a reason the Rams might want to just let him off the hook, not because they're doing him a favor, because it's like the things where you want to bring in a good coach. You don't want it uber restrictive where once you come to the school, you can never leave to find a better opportunity, whether it be better competition, better pay. You want to live in a certain part of the country. If you just fire him, say, we're sticking this to you no matter what, that could hinder a future coaching search. Because, well, if they stuck to Eustachy, what's them not sticking it to me to go to the letter of the law at the buyout? But I think it'll come out to be where Eustachy will owe them something. I don't think he's getting away. With, because you're not punishing him in one bit. He should be punished for something. Yes, being fired and for the rest of the contract, because he could earn about another $3 million. So yeah, that's a big punishment to lose out on that money, but that's kind of getting away with everything, because, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's a good point. I think that it's interesting to think about other coaches pursuing a job knowing that the university has a history of firing coaches or picking up buyouts, things like that. But every coach in America knows who Larry Eustachy is and
Yeah.
coincidentally knows what he has done to hurt the universities in which he's coached at. So I think everyone probably expects Eustachy to be terminated one way or another. And in a scenario where it's probably justified because what he's done behind the scenes is not something that's acceptable at the Division One level or any level
Yeah.
to add to that.
And there could be stuff built in, but my prediction right now, he's not gonna be the coach. I think it's pretty clear, obviously. He's gonna I bet he'll owe them at least $2 million.
I wouldn't rule it out. Definitely wouldn't rule it out.
Because actually, you'd be a dummy not to pursue that money, because they already had a surplus on the was just over $3 million for the football stadium. So that's $3+ million. Let's say they get $6 total million. That's they did not have. That could go for a lot of things, not just athletics, but other sport. I mean, well, same thing. But you know, I mean, $6 million is a lot of money for. When that triples your over triples your revenue, you get four times your typical TV revenue you're getting.
And I don't expect the next head coach to earn much more than half of what Larry Eustachy's annual contract without bonuses was with Colorado State. So any money that you can bring in, it just adds to the university. So that'll be a good boost for the Rams if they are able to do that.
So let's talk about this, because there's one question that came in. We'll get to all the games and tournament stuff going forward here, or not tournament, but like kind of look ahead. There's one question here. The most attract. This is from our good buddy, Fake Matt Mummy. Love him. He's a fake Coach Mummy on Twitter. So, most attractive job opening this offseason. Is it the only job, Colorado State?
Well, I would have told you heading into the year it would have been
Utah
Utah
State.
State, with Tim Duryea leaving. But I think he's done enough to probably stick around, and they've had an up and down season. But I think Colorado State is probably the only head coaching spot opening up. Maybe Air Force with Dave Popovich, but probably not. San Jose State has a new coach. They're struggling this year.
San Diego
But
State,
you,
UNLV,
San Diego,
essentially.
they're going to keep with Brian Dutcher. Paul Weir's done an excellent job at New Mexico. Alan Edwards, the same in Logan, or excuse me, in Laramie with Wyoming. So I think you'll probably see only Colorado State open up. potentially Air Force, but
Yeah.
that's such a difficult job to maintain that I don't really know if moving on from Dave Pilipovich will be the best thing for that program.
Utah State maybe, because right now they're 14-13. They did match the amount of wins last year, and if they get Mickey or McElwain for another year, obviously that's going to build on there. So I guess CSU, and as for who the coach would be, we have our list up. People have shared it and read it quite extensively, so check that out if you want to read what Eli put out there. A lot of people like Becky Hammon, and don't listen to the haters who think she's a terrible coach or shouldn't be coaching men's basketball. Those people are losers or whatever. You don't need to worry about them. You can coach. My biggest concern here with her, like I said, zero college coaching experience. That's a big deal. So, but that's the.
I guess one thing to note on Utah State, right now I'd probably give a coin flip on whether or not Tim Durie is coming back next year. But the thing is, if you're with USU right now, is that if you do get rid of Tim Duryea, there's a really good chance you also lose Cody McEwen, Sam Merrill, and D'Angelo Isby to go along with it, because they could very well pursue greener pastures. And if that's the case, you're starting from square one. I mean, without those three, you're probably looking at one of the two or three worst rosters in the Mountain West.
All right, let me go the other way real quick. Eric Musselman gone. Could that be the most attractive job?
It's hard to say, because Musselman, I think, is probably the sole reason why Nevada's as good as they are right now, because of how he's transformed the program. So when the coach leaves the program, you kind of wonder what the basketball tradition will be like without that coach. But Nevada has had historically good teams in the past. But if that job were to open up, and with the national label that Musselman has provided for Nevada the last couple seasons, I think that would be a pretty attractive job.
Okay. That'd probably be the most attractive, right? More than CSU, do you think?
I don't know. Oh man, that's tough. Do you think you would probably go with Nevada instead of Colorado State? I think I'm about even.
I would meet. Here's the thing. CSU's had more long-term success historically than Nevada. That's where, like, with Tim Miles and even they had, what's his name, Stu Morrill, roaming the sidelines there. They've been better overall than Nevada. And so. It's, I don't know, the transfer thing is a big deal because how many of these guys coming in are going to want to stay if it's a new coach as well? So
That's right.
that's an issue. And then pretty, I'd say Nevada because depends who you get too. Depends what type of coach. Are they going to go get like some retread or my favorite, Mark Pope, who'll eventually be getting a higher job from Utah Valley one of these days. But I'm just saying, it might depend. It's pretty even. I'd probably give a slight edge to CSU because they've done it longer than Nevada and at a higher level because Nevada's moved up from the Big West to the WAC the past, what, 15 years? And you think that, well, 15 years, but look at Utah State. They've been struggling after dominating the Big West forever, doing extremely well at the top of the WAC. They get the Mountain West, and some of those same teams jumped up with them. They're still not getting 20-plus wins like they had forever. So that's why I think CSU by a hair, but not by much.
Yeah, I think it also depend on whether or not if we're going the hypothetical that Musselman leaves, whether or not the assistant coaches with Nevada would stay, because they have a really deep and strong assistant coaching staff in Reno.
Dave Rice, baby. Dave Rice.
Johnny Jones is
Oh
there,
no, Dave
who's,
Rice left. I'm sorry.
yeah,
No,
but like you kind of
man.
mentioned, is that they've had a lot of good assistant coaches pass through Reno and have gone on to better jobs. So it's definitely a good place to assert yourself as a strong assistant coach that could eventually lead to a head coaching job. But yeah, both programs, when they're at their stronger points, are some of the more attractive mid-major jobs in the country, I'd say.
So I don't sound like a dummy. Dave Rice is at Washington or Gonzaga?
Yeah, at Washington.
Okay. I remember. I'm like, oh, Dave Rice. Oh, crap. No, he's not. All right. Let's get to some
He's been
games.
around.
He's been around. Just hopefully he can learn some late coaching situations to be a better guy next
Oh,
time.
no.
Hey, every time.
It's not a podcast until we mention that, right?
Every time. So let's get to some games. There's one big game this week. Nevada, Boise State.
I was going to go with the segue and say, well, UNLV didn't have to worry about a late game scenario this weekend.
Oh, jeez, that game. We'll get to that later, but let's go back to last week because that was a big game. You had a piece about talking with, was it his high school coach? One of it, was it the assistant coach down there in California for Hutchinson?
Yeah, one of Hutchison's coaches down in Mission Viejo was kind enough to help me out a little bit on a story about Hutchison tracking his development into a potential maybe lottery pick in June. We'll see. But he's been playing really good basketball, and it's just crazy to think that just a handful of years ago, Hutchison wasn't even a varsity starter on his own high school team, but he's there now, and Boise State wasn't able to pick up the victory that they really, really needed against Nevada, but it was an excellent game, and I would hope for a round three in Vegas. What do you think?
Sure, why not?
Yeah.
But like he needs like he's the scoring thing. Like he was never really scoring until like what was it, his first 60 games? He averaged like 6 points a game or something his first 2 years at Boise
Oh, first
State.
2 years were brutal. Yeah, I don't think he averaged over 5 points a game in his first 2 years.
And then last year he's what first team all conference. He's one of the best players in the conference overall. So here's that game. Like a couple things, Boise fans are chanting about Lindsey Drew, hoping he's injured. Grow up. Don't do that. That was ridiculously dumb. Because he's out with a ruptured Achilles. He's out for the year. I don't know how they're going to handle it. Because this game, this is pretty close. 77-72. Maybe we should mention the score. It is about a week old, so we don't need to go too deep into it. But they're already, like, Lindsey Drew played 19 minutes. Hard didn't play, only had 4 points. But Boise's effort, like, they had a complete effort. It wasn't just Hutchinson. Because he was, what, fourth in scoring on the team with only 13, third in scoring. Bench is deep, but they only get 8 points off the bench from Hobbs there, and Alex Hobbs with him make going to 4 of 9. But Nevada just it's just Martin and Carroll, you know what I mean? And Kendall Stevens stepped up big. This is a team where when they're on for 3 point range, which is why they won Kendall Stevens. Boise State, I guess they needed Hutchinson to take over, but he just you can't go 4 of 14, man. That's all I gotta say about that. You gotta he did
He missed 7 of his last 8.
yeah, late in the game it's like. And it was a 5 point game. They were, it was a lot of points too. They are only down by two in the second half scoring. But Hutchinson, if you're going to be that guy, because we've seen him take over versus Utah State, Fresno State, when games are close, he usually steps up. But the Nevada is one of the teams when you have whoever's down, like if he tries to drive to the hoop, like he likes to create his own stuff, that wasn't happening late because you're missing shots, man. And if Boise's going to win the conference championship, which I think they can with Drew out, he has to do a little bit better than that.
Yeah, I think so. And he's hit big shots in the past. I just recall his game winner in November against UTEP. He had a game winning layup after he had struggled, and he also hit a buzzer beater against Colorado State last season. So he's known to take some clutch shots and usually make them. But I thought Nevada did a really good job defending him, and they've done pretty well defending him the last few years. So it's a big win for Nevada and Boise State. You have to wonder whether or not they'll be able to make that 3-game push in Vegas, because they need it now. The at-large possibilities are completely out the window without any quality victories and a few bad losses on their resume. So sometimes it just isn't in the cards, and that was the case on Valentine's Day against Nevada. So the loss of Lindsey Drew, I don't think many people understand how big of a loss that is for Nevada, and I know the short rotation stuff, that's huge, but Lindsey Drew is just a do-it-all guard for the Wolfpack. He's hit some huge shots this season. He gets assists and rebounds and defensive plays as often as any other player in this league, and he just makes plays. And without him, it changes the dynamic of the Nevada offense. So we'll see if Hollis Cook is able to step in. And he hasn't played a huge role with Nevada yet in his 2 seasons there. Excuse me, first season there. But he's hit some big shots too. So I think Nevada's in okay shape, even with the loss of Drew, and they also lost Williams earlier this season. But man, things are getting dicey for the Wolfpack, and it's just crazy how close they are to this whole thing blowing up. I keep thinking about that article that I had written a few weeks ago, basically framing the what if. If a player were to get hurt for the rest of the year, or if they were to run into constant foul trouble in games against big teams, and that. And since I wrote that article, that's basically been the case with the Martins obviously dealing with injuries throughout the year, and now Lindsey Drew goes down after a half court shot at the buzzer. And I mean, they're playing with 6, 7 guys the rest of the season in hopes of reaching the NCAA tournament. So it'll be interesting to see what happens, but man, you don't see stories like this very often, that's for sure.
Now, I think what they need to have done is Kendall Stevens need to step it up, which he sort of can at times. But like looking at the Utah State game, they needed to score 93 points to beat Utah State team. And they had 73 come from three players, both Martin brothers and Jordan Caroline. Nobody else had double digits. They technically had four people off the bench play, but Cunningham and Thule had 0 minutes. So I guess they round down if you catch the game. But they needed that many points to beat. I know Kobe had 32 for Utah State, and he went 10 of 20 from the field. But if you need 93 to beat Utah State, you're in trouble. And they basically have already clinched the number one seed because they already have a two-game lead and own the tiebreaker over Boise State. So they'd have to lose three more times to not win the conference title, even though technically they have a two-game loss column lead, 1.5 overall. They'd basically have to have five losses to not win the conference title. They're going to win the conference title, be the number one seed. But I got to say Boise is probably my favorite to win the league because – 3 games in 3 days or whatever they're going to play. I know short bench. Everybody's going to tighten it up in the tournament. Like, how much tighter can it get for Nevada? They're already going to be down. I mean, Drew's down. Who else are you going to give minutes to? If we're looking at it right now, I got to give Boise the best team to be there in Las Vegas because they played them close, and Nevada, they'll only have a couple games to figure something out. And Musselman, what we've seen, he's not going to change much of anything. He may give... Like I mentioned, those guys who got technically 0 minutes, they might get a minute or two here or there, but he's not going to change much. This is going to be a 7-player bench for the whole conference tournament and beyond.
I would probably, I guess, since we're already on the topic, we did get a question this evening, which was from Jay the Lobo fan on Twitter. He said, aside from Nevada, what team do you feel is getting hot at the right moment to maybe snatch the auto bid? Curious to hear your responses. So, it sounds like you're going with Boise
State.
I wouldn't say
Boise State's a hotter team because they're not. They lost. I'm just saying, like, who they have overall. I guess you could go with your team. I probably know who you're going to say, but go ahead.
Yeah, you probably know. It's Fresno State.
Yeah.
And they've been playing really good basketball. They've won 7 of 9. Their two losses were a 3-point loss to Utah State and an 11-point loss on the road to Nevada. And the stretch ahead, the remaining 4 games that the Bulldogs have are all winnable. So we could realistically see them winning 7 of 8 before they head to Vegas. And I think when they're on, and I've mentioned this countless times, when they're playing as well as they can play, they're virtually unbeatable. And that front court has stepped up. They've won their last 4 games all by at least 18 points, which is very impressive. So I'd probably roll with the Bulldogs if we're not going Nevada, but I think Nevada's still the favorite regardless.
I would say UNLV, but not when you get doubled up by a bad Aztec team.
Oh my gosh, they got absolutely leveled.
Like I was looking, like okay, they played Boise because we talked about them last week. They played Boise close by 2 points. Barrett lost to Fresno by both road losses by 8 total points. They beat Aztecs at home by 10. They beat like whatever San Jose State. They got the huge win over UNL or Nevada on the road in Reno. Then
They were playing really, really good basketball.
Yeah.
And the winners of 5 of 6, you mentioned that overtime loss. And then they lost 94-56 to a San Diego State team that, frankly, has been one of the probably 5 worst teams in the conference this year.
So I guess I could, if I want to be sneaky weird, I could say UNLV just because it's their home court. But the losing by, was it 4-10? It was a. What's that, 48 points or whatever? 94-56. I'm not going to do the math. A lot to a little. And so being there at home is going to help. Hot-wise, yeah, Fresno, because Fresno's not getting talked about at all. Like, yeah, they've been, like, not just winning teams. They've been playing well. Like, San Diego State's not very good, but their past four victories have been, what, 18-point minimum. Like, Wyoming by 18. San Diego State by 18 as well. 20 over San Jose State. Colorado State by, 20, what's that, 21 points? Yeah, so they've just been crushing everybody. It's not like they're squeaking by, and they scored 92 versus Nevada and lost. And so they're a good team that nobody's paying attention to, I think, and they're a team that's going to – I would go with you, but, yeah, I think Boise's a favorite, but for hottest team, Fresno by far, and nobody seems to care about them.
No, and that's kind of their MO, too, and I think the Fresno State players know that, and I've followed – a lot of what they say on social media. Their players I really like their personalities because they play with this huge chip on their shoulder and they know that no one really seems to give them credit no matter what they do. And that's the kind of attitude I think if you're in Fresno State's position that you need to possess heading into Vegas, knowing that you need to win every game that you play. And if Fresno State, if they enter the tournament having won 8 straight games with the 2 losses, close losses to Utah State and Nevada, I think that's all the momentum that they need to potentially upset some teams and enter the NCAA tournament.
All right, you want to know why Fresno should not, let me ask you this, Eli. Do you know how many head coaches have won a conference title, tournament, championship in the Mountain West at the moment?
Wait, can you rephrase
Yes, sorry, that was a terrible question. How many head coaches in this conference have a conference tournament championship?
Oh man. How many active coaches right now?
Coaching on this on of the 11 teams, how many coaches have won a conference championship within the Mountain West? Two.
I wouldn't have guessed more than 3.
Rodney, Terry, and Musselman. That's it.
Yeah, that's right.
So that's why you want Fresno to, hey, I know what Menzies has done.
Huh. That's a
Different.
good stat. That's pretty good, Jeremy.
I was looking there, I'm like, because I know that we're talking coaches earlier. I'm like, okay, I was double checking for Leon Rice really quick, but I knew Allen Edwards because he took over for Schroyer. Dutcher's there. Durie hasn't done anything. Stu Merle's gone. Well, they haven't won it, but yeah. So only, that's why Fresno State should not be overlooked. They have a head coach who's won a conference title, and so that's nothing to sneeze at. And so there you go.
So we could realistically enter the Mountain West tournament final with the only active Mountain West head coaches that have ever won a Mountain West title.
True, very exactly, and
A
technically,
rubber match.
yeah, something like that. Sure. So, I'm looking at TeamRankings.com. This is quite interesting because I'm going to do these daily articles once we get to Vegas and lead up to it. Maybe not now, just because. Let's play a game, Eli.
Oh boy.
It's
Whenever you say that, I'm like, oh man, I'm about to embarrass myself.
okay. This is 100% total, so it's not like 100% per team. So, TeamRankings.com has Nevada as the favorite at 37% chance to win the conference tournament. Who would you say is number two?
UNLV.
You're close. I'll just read.
San Diego State?
Oh, almost there too. No, it's Boise State.
Okay.
Here's a percentage breakdown because you brought up the two teams I was going to mention. 16.5% for Boise. San Diego State, or excuse me, UNLV, 15.5%. San Diego State, 14%. Both of those are more than Fresno State.
I have nothing to add on that San Diego State percentage.
I know UNLV. I'm like, okay, whatever. But this is
You're telling
clearly.
me 1 out of 7 times this San Diego State team is going to win the Mountain West tournament team rankings. Is that's what you're trying to tell me?
That's what I'm telling. Team up 7-7 in league play,
Oof.
15-10 overall. Yeah, they
Well,
didn't.
hey, when you beat UNLV by 40, maybe there's something to that, right?
Was that game at Viejas?
Yeah, it was.
Okay.
I know,
Not
I was thinking about that
double
too.
checking real quick. I can see the Rebels getting a little more bumped just because they're at home for the tourney, but I'll have to keep an eye on those team rankings because it's a fun place to
What
look
about
at.
Colorado State?
0.1.
Stupid upset pick.
0.1.
Okay.
Just for you to keep a track, that's not the
You're
lowest.
saying there's a chance.
Yes, just so you know, Air Force, San Jose State, 0%.
It's mathematically impossible, huh?
Well, it's not, but it's less than 1/10 of a percent. What is
Man,
shock? What
that's
is shocking?
tough.
What is shocking? Really quick, Wyoming's only given 2.2%.
Okay, San Diego State's 7 times more likely to win this thing than Wyoming.
Yeah, that's what's being said.
Team rankings. I don't know about you sometimes.
Hey, them and FPI, right?
Oh yeah.
Was there any other?
Anyway, I only understand KenPom
You
sometimes.
know what's even more interesting? Okay,
What's that?
Seth Greenberg. He likes to be weird on Twitter sometimes.
Yeah.
So, how familiar are you with Penn State basketball at the moment? Are they kind of all over the place?
Yeah, they're kind of sporadic.
So, here's why he should never, ever be on the selection committee ever.
Oh
Ever.
boy.
He goes, this is tonight on Sunday night. I don't care what their quad one wins are. Penn State basketball would win a game in March Madness. They have the guys that can make flat out make plays, poor management at end of half, but these dudes can break you down.
In 2019 or 2020?
This tweet, February 18th, 2018.
I hope he knows which tournament he's talking about because I don't think that's going to be this tournament.
And I can't base on, oh, if they can beat any team. Yeah, hey, guess what? UNLV could beat 16th seeded Belmont, or you know what I mean, or some SWAC team. You know what I mean? Like that, saying they could win a tournament game is not over really high bar to surpass. Not that I'm saying one seed, but you get my point. It's like, I don't care. It's not the point. They have to earn victories. You can't be close losers unless you're
This,
Syracuse.
yeah, exactly. This might just be my observation, but it seems as if announcers this year have been incredibly generous with how they're approaching this year's bracket. I don't know if you follow David Warlock, who does the media coordination for NCAA, but yesterday he wrote, "By my count today, college basketball broadcasters have placed 174 teams into the tournament."
I was about to bring that tweet up. I didn't know who said it, but I remember seeing it. I was going to
It's
mention
so
that.
true. Everyone is saying that every team has a chance. I don't know where to begin.
It's no, I saw that. I'm like, oh, that's a good tweet there. It's whatever. It's things happen, but saying it's like saying, are they a Sweet 16 team? Well, it doesn't mean you're one of the 16 best teams in college basketball because Florida Gulf Coast a couple years ago made the Sweet 16. Great team, great story, had two great victories, but they're not one of the top 16 teams that year. So it's
Yeah.
like it's just drawn stuff, but I just wanted to bring that up because Seth Greenberg is being weird.
I guess to bring it back to the Mountain West scope,
What do we got?
how many teams do you think realistically could win the Mountain West tournament?
Oh.
If you looked up Sports Reference in 2 months, would you not be surprised to see X amount of teams as the Mountain West tournament champion?
Honestly, I could see five teams winning the conference tournament.
So I would guess Nevada, Boise, Fresno, UNLV, and Wyoming.
Oh, that's four, right? One, two, three, four. Wait, who'd you say again? Sorry, Nevada, Boise. Here, I'll just say them because I just spaced out for half a second. Nevada, Boise, Fresno, UNLV, and Wyoming.
Yeah, I think so. I think so too.
So there could be. We'll get to it later because we'll be in Vegas doing some. Maybe we shouldn't mention if we're going to place money or not towards games, but we'll see. I'll keep that a little secret.
Rigging the system, yeah.
How ethical is that to whatever? I'm not going to get into it. They don't pay us enough to decide if we're ethical or not.
Yeah, I was gonna
Not
say.
yet. We're hoping. Were there any other games this past week we really need to discuss? We mentioned the blowouts. Boise, Nevada, CSU still struggling with their whatever's going on with them. I don't know.
San Jose State still is not capable of scratching out a win.
Are they going to get a victory, conference victory this year?
Oh man, I don't see it happening now. Well, maybe in the finale at Air Force. KenPom
At
gives them a 29% chance of winning.
keyword at.
I mean, regardless of whether it's home or away, I don't really know if it matters at this
I'm
point.
just saying.
Yeah, I know. Air Force has been decent at home though this year. I'll have to give them credit for that.
But then again, 27% chance. So it's let's take a look. Let's see if there's FP. Let's see if there's a BPI for that game. There is a BPI for that final game,
Here we go.
March 3rd, 2 p.m. local time. We know the favorite's going to be Air Force. What's the percentage?
Air Force is a 68% favorite.
Close, 77%.
Oh.
That's in line with KenPom, just about. You said 27.
This is pretty close. I would like to see San Jose State win a conference game. I think that coaching staff is pretty level-headed, and I hate
Tough
to see
spot
San
too.
Jose State head towards where they were the last couple years after the Dave Wojcik stuff, but man, this team is just not getting it done right now.
Well, it's tough. You lose your best player. You had to hire a coach in the summer, so it's like how it's this year is a waste. Mulligan, not a waste. But like what kind of what Paul Weir said in New Mexico, year one, nobody's expecting much, but here we are. This is kind of the opposite, but it's I don't know how better they'll be next year, but it's tough. They've
They bring almost everyone back,
That's
which
true.
could be good.
That'll be something. So, I guess I don't know, nothing big this week. I guess Fresno at UNLV could be intriguing on Wednesday, just because it's at UNLV. If we wanted to see Fresno be that team, like if they're the hot team to maybe win the conference tournament or over exceed expectations, UNLV's always good at home. It's going to be obviously Planet Thomas and Mack. I think that could be something we should watch on Wednesday night because Brandon McCoy plays well. Maureen does a good job. Let's see what Taylor and everybody else can do for Fresno. But that's probably, if you're going to watch a game this week, at least weeknight, watch that one.
Yeah, there's some really good individual matchups in that game as well. I'll be curious to see how the Fresno State front court does against Juuson and McCoy of UNLV. And then the guards for both teams are pretty excellent. So that'll be a good one. And Fresno State will have to familiarize themselves with winning at the Thompson Mac if they hope to reach the NCAA tournament.
And if you have $8, you can get into that game.
There you go. That sounds like a pretty sweet deal.
And let's play I'm thinking football. BPI. What are we for Fresno at UNLV?
If I remember correctly, I don't think BPI likes UNLV that much.
Okay.
You're not giving me any hints here. Okay.
Yeah. I was about to. I'm like, nope, I'm going to stop.
I'm giving UNLV the 53% nod.
Not quite. Close. 61. 62%. So.
Ooh, okay.
A little bit more, especially coming off that big loss.
Oh, man. Yeah, you're not lying.
Understatement, big loss.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess if we're going to go to Saturday, I like basketball, but sometimes it's like I don't want to watch San Jose State play basketball. I'm sorry, guys. I guess Wyoming at Fresno State will be another big one. That's on ESPNU, 8 o'clock or 7 p.m. Pacific out there. I think that could be interesting because the duo of James and Dalton for Wyoming, that's the reason why I would predict them to have a shot in the conference tournament. If those two guys go off for 50 points a game, they could beat anybody.
I'm seeing right now, I could be wrong, but it seems like Utah State Air Force is the highest rated game on KenPom for Saturday out of the Mountain West. That can't be right.
Why? How? You sure about
that?
Okay,
there's Wyoming Fresno State at 39.2. Okay, I think that is the highest rated game. But like you said, that should be an interesting game. And I think Wyoming's still just a team that you can't quite figure out what they'll do on the road or at home. They did have that three-game winning streak in which they beat Utah State, San Jose State, and Colorado State, and I know that's not the class of the Mountain West, but it did happen, and then they lost.
It's a thing.
Yeah, it's very much a thing. And then they lost two straight games by double digits to UNLV and San Diego State. So take that for what it's worth. But I think Fresno State could have a pretty solid week this week, and potentially – would you give them a chance to sneak up that number two spot? They're a loss behind Boise State right now. But lose another game.
Let's check their schedule. They've played Boise twice already? Or once? What did they play one time?
They played once.
And lost. So the one issue a little bit is that the extra game, which just they played that Monday night game on February 26th, that's because the makeup game of the Air Force. I can see them winning now. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if Fresno finishes 23-8, but Boise would have to lose. What I'm trying to look at the standings. So are they one game back or two games back?
Fresno State is one game back in the loss column.
One loss. So,
but Boise State does have the head-to-head advantage.
Now they'll be three because losing twice doesn't seem likely. Because they're not. Boise's not, and they only have three games left as well. So you'd have to see them losing probably at San Diego State and home versus Wyoming, which. The way Aztecs play to get to UNLV, I give them a small chance, but now Fresno's going to be a three seed, which means they'll play Boise in the semifinals most likely. And
that'll be a really good game.
And hopefully my travel works well. I'll be down there. I will be down there, but I'm just saying. I'll be there, but I'm just, you know, stuff happens. I'm leaving it out there.
A semifinal with Nevada against UNLV and Boise State against Fresno State would make for some awesome matchups. That would be really, really fun.
Stay up till 4 a.m. on the East Coast. That last game is probably 9:30 Pacific.
Shouts to the reporters getting it done.
Okay, let me ask you one more question here. Mm-hmm. Fresno State, let's get back on them. Are they going to receive votes in Monday's AP poll or whenever it comes out? Is it coming out tomorrow, President's Day, or will it be out normal?
I think it'll be out tomorrow, and I definitely don't think they'll receive any votes.
No votes?
No. The way that the AP voters handled Boise State this year, I don't think they'll show Fresno any love.
Because Boise's not even getting any votes right now, are they?
No. And even when they're at their peak before they had those losses and they started playing a bit off their usual self, I don't think they scored more than 1 point any of those couple weeks there.
They're getting like 2 points. Well, okay, let me ask you this. If Fresno goes undefeated for regular season, will they be ranked? Probably not.
You mean entering conference tournament week?
Yes. By the time the Mountain West plays conference tournament, they're sitting at 23-8. Will they be in the top 25 of the AP poll?
I think they would probably receive some votes, but I don't think they'd make the top 25.
Would Boise State if they go undefeated the rest of the way?
Yes, because I think more people are talking about Boise than Fresno.
Even though Boise right now has 0 points in either pool.
I'd probably give if they both won out, I would say Boise State had a better chance of receiving more votes in the AP poll than Fresno.
All right, one last thing. We're gonna wrap it up here. So we're talking about this stuff. Like Fresno's not really getting the credit. I think partly because I don't know. I haven't done my BPI thing recently, or FPI or the KenPom stuff. I've been kind of switching it up to standings wise. Does Fresno have any chance for an at-large bid?
No.
Zero chance.
No.
They're.
No chance.
I'm looking up. Okay, I'm looking at bracket matrix. Like, no team has them at all. Is that a little surprising to you, or is that what you expected?
I wouldn't say it's surprising. I just think Fresno State didn't start off too hot. Given they did start off 9-2, but lost to Evansville and no quality wins didn't really put them on the map. And then once they did get their shot against Oregon, they blew that game. And then they've been flying under the radar ever since. And that's why even among Mountain West circles, you won't find many people talking about them.
I think also Utah State loss doesn't help either. Twice.
Right, twice, yeah.
Yeah.
Getting swept by Utah State does not help your cause.
So, all right. So, okay. We'll get into all this other stuff later, but anything else we need to add? We answered a couple of questions. We trimmed down our CSU talk to the first 15 minutes only tonight.
If Fresno State's a 13 seed in the NCAA tournament after winning the Mountain West tournament, just say that we definitely warned you guys.
Yeah, weren't they a 13 seed when they played Utah a couple years ago?
I think there were a 14.
Something pretty low. So,
I'm pretty sure there were 14.
yeah, if we're gonna pay, like, okay, let's get out on this really quick. I know it's early, and we'll get to it down the road. But who would be like the most dangerous non-Boise Nevada team? Is it Fresno or Wyoming? Is say either see say those are the two teams that would. Or let's throw in UNLV as well. If you had UNLV, because I think those five teams have a shot to win the conference tournament. If UNLV, Fresno, or Wyoming get into the NCAA tournament, who would you say would have the best chance to get a victory?
Oh man, I would probably say UNLV because I
Because it.
think some teams would have trouble matching up with McCoy and Juuson, and if Jovan Mooring is shooting as well as Jordan Johnson, if those two are shooting well from the perimeter, I think Rebels are pretty tough to stop.
Okay, I was just curious. I know it's hard to tell about opponent and stuff, and I know it's all about guard play, but UNLV has good guard play and down low play. So, all right, that's all we got for tonight. We'll be back next week where we'll talk, what else, more Mountain West hoops. And check us out, MWWire.com. Check out our Wyoming piece on the 75-year team winning national title by Ryan Swanson, who the team featured four guys named James. So it just read us everything he does a good job. So check out all of his stuff because it's always good. He's done a few different pieces, but check that out. Check out we'll have our basketball stuff this week. Like I'll do kind of a preview, early preview. Like, hey, here's the standings. Here's the early bracket. Maybe I will, to Eli's chagrin, write something with teamrankings.com included, just
Oh boy.
because.
Do it for the hits, right?
Exactly. So that's all I got. So again, subscribe to our podcast. Let friends know you like our show, or if you don't like our show, still let them know because let them decide for themselves. Go to iTunes, Stitcher, Blog Talk Radio, TuneIn, basically anywhere where podcasts are sold, you can find us. And we'll see you next week.